Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Anish Chopra, president of Care Journey and former U.S. Chief Technology Officer. Welcome, Anish.
Hey, thanks, Matt. A pleasure to be with you, and thanks for doing what you do on the show. It's wonderful to listen.
Well, it's great to have you on. And before we dive into the main part of our conversation, what I'd like to do with all my guests is ask them to give a little bit of an introduction in terms of who you are and what you do beyond kind of what I've already said.
All right. Well, thank you. So I am a passionate public servant, now entrepreneur. I served as Virginia Secretary of Technology under Governor Tim Kaine and under President Obama as his Chief Technology Officer. And among my priority areas had been to open up government-held data, to ensure that we harness the full power and potential of the internet to solve problems, and that we tapped into the expertise of the country in joining in that effort, more bottom-up versus top-down change. And in healthcare particularly, we felt that this was critical as we transitioned the delivery system to one that rewards more of a value focus rather than operate in the traditional fee-for-service setting. And so what I've done is commercialized a business that takes full advantage of the openly available data sets and resources, and to make them available for organizations who are looking to move to value-based care, whether they be health insurance companies or healthcare delivery system participants, doctors and hospitals, or even organizations like pharmaceuticals or medical device companies who are looking to figure out how they fit in the broader move to value.
So when you're talking about freeing up and making data more available, what are some of the most important data sets that you'd look for and that you want to have be publicly available?
Well, let's start from the first proposition that since healthcare in the U.S. is highly fragmented, for the most part, other than perhaps some of the few integrated networks like Kaiser, it is really difficult to stitch together the patient's overall journey and to understand from that journey whether or not they've gotten the best possible care and whether or not they've had access to services that perhaps one might deem to be lower value. And so to do that, you need access to the full journey. And in the bulk of healthcare today, the source of that data is typically the insurance company because they pay all the administrative claims. So they know that you've seen a primary care doctor or you didn't, you've been to the hospital, you came back for follow-up or you didn't. And can measure what we're billed for with respect to tests that may not have been useful or other attributes. And the largest insurance company in the country remains Medicare. And for years, that data had been inaccessible for commercial use. If you were a researcher under particular circumstances, you might be able to study the Medicare program and then publish after a few years of your research a finding that might be of interest. But for that finding to translate into changes on the day-to-day to make sure the system worked better for people to correct for that failure, it would take decades. In fact, the average estimate is from a research finding to impact people's lives at the bedside could take as long as 17 years. So the current circumstance now is if the Medicare program could make the underlying data available for commercial use, we might compress the time to learn what works and what doesn't and to really scale faster than what the current system does. And that was a big part of our work. Can we find a legal way for the Medicare data, the administrative data associated with Medicare program be used for this move to value-based care? And thankfully, we now are in a world where there are at least four legal pathways to make use of that data. And I spend my time at Care Journey working on three of those four ways.
And would you mind just kind of illuminating what the four ways are? Because I suspect people might not be familiar with all of them.
Sure, sure. So in the Affordable Care Act, there was a provision. It was categorized as ways to provide more transparency on quality and cost, which you would think of as a scorecard. And maybe we would call it a physician scorecard for purposes of this discussion. Well, the Affordable Care Act said, look, I presume the government's going to do what it can with hospital compare and physician compare, but we should create a vehicle for the private sector, be it nonprofit, be it for-profit, to assist in the development of a scorecard or multiple scorecards that can help patients navigate to the highest value delivery options. The program that ensued, PATH, that was initiated by the Affordable Care Act, was called the Qualified Entity Program. Qualified entities are organizations that apply for this license, go through a security and privacy vetting, and then they take physical possession of the Medicare claims history, either for a region or for the entire country. And there are probably a dozen or two that have been approved since 2010, and they can range from large organizations like Optum to nonprofit organizations like the Healthcare Costs Institute, who, by the way, I serve on the board of for disclosure purposes, and many organizations in between. These organizations have certain obligations. They are instructed to make their findings public, but that they should provide some mechanism for physicians who are going to be graded in this new model to push back or to react to see whether or not there's been some flaw in how those grades were developed. And so that program has been off to the races, and that was the initiating pathway. In short, to spare your listeners some long detail, the very next option was Medicare launched an Accountable Care Organizations program, a shared savings program, where doctors and hospitals could bandy together to form a network, could negotiate a deal with Medicare that says, if you are to manage the population that you are assigned and bring their costs down while keeping quality up, you can share in the savings that are generated to the Medicare program. And there are north of 500 of these organizations across the country. For the patients that are assigned to those ACOs, Medicare provides the claims history for those patients and provides kind of monthly updates so that those organizations can make better use of that information to coordinate care and in general to make sure that they're assigning the right patients to the right care management intervention and they can measure what works. And that program does have some privacy protections in that a patient can opt out. CMS will write a letter to the patient, say you've been enrolled in this program and our data is being shared with Dr. Smith. If you are uncomfortable with that information, call 1-800-MEDICARE, and about 3% of the population opts out. The third method was introduced in 2015 when CMS made the policy change that a researcher that's approved to access the Medicare program, rather than having Medicare physically ship the files to the researcher could log in to a CMS-provided database, perform their research, and take out the summary findings without violating any patient's privacy. And in 2015, CMS made the policy decision to define researcher more broadly. So for-profits, nonprofits, startups, big companies, academics, anyone that applies for a research license, submits a research protocol, CMS's data governance team evaluates it, and then they make that license available for the provisions for commercial use. And that program's been off and running since 2015. And then last but not least, and probably the most exciting area, Medicare in August of 2018 went live on a program called Blue Button API, which would mean that a consumer in the Medicare program could connect their claims history and weekly updates to that information to an application of their choice. So app developers, whether they be insurance companies like Humana that's already live or startups or organizations all across the spectrum, they can now go straight to Medicare patients and say, if you'd like to share your Medicare data with us, we'll provide you insights, suggestions, decision support, whatever the case may be. And those are the four pathways that are available. Care Journey, by the way, just for disclosure on the company, we are on the latter three. We support data processing for Medicare ACOs. We have a license, a researcher-approved license on the national CMS database, and we support Medicare Blue Button app developers who are building those products that are going direct to consumer.
And that's certainly a wealth of data that you're describing. And it's, you know, as you said, it's going towards helping with the focus on high quality, more efficient care and better value. And it feels like a lot of what you're describing is, you know, as you said, claims history and individual care. But is that including data around the cost of care?
So this is an exceptional point. In the Medicare fee-for-service program, as you know, rates are essentially set by regulation. There's some adjustments based on your local salary and wage conditions. But by and large, Medicare is not individually negotiating a price so that Hospital A has a better price than Hospital B. It's basically a uniform pricing model. And so Medicare pricing data has been public for many, many, in fact, forever. It's been a fairly standard part of the program. The issue of price in the context of Medicare claims data is that often different services clump together in the form of a payment for what you and I might say is a simple procedure. I want to get my knee replaced, which is a very common procedure in the Medicare program. While the knee replacement seems simple, it actually is a collection of hundreds, if not thousands, of individual line items, from preoperative testing to the surgery itself, to the physician visit, therapy, post-acute care services, nursing care, et cetera. And all of those individual line items often get clumped together in the form of a bundled payment. So one way of thinking about price transparency in the Medicare program is for Medicare to release the prices on these various bundles of activities. In fact, in the Affordable Care Act, Medicare was charged with making such information publicly available. It spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars on a research team to construct these episode bundles. The results of that today largely appear as a PDF file on the CMS website, not very useful for the average Joe who doesn't have access to SAS code to figure out exactly what their quote unquote price is. But there's definitely a process and a movement underway to help usher that information into the public domain so that organizations can convert that bundles logic, if you will, into more rational pricing for the Medicare patient. And that is something that is still a work in progress. And hopefully folks listening to your show might advocate for Medicare to release that information in a manner that is more easily digestible for consumers.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point in terms of making data in any form, whether it's coming from Medicare, I think a lot of different sources, more easily digestible and usable by regular individuals. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Anish Chopra from Care Journey today, and we've been talking about transitioning to value-based care and starting to dive into pricing. And what we were just talking about, Anish, was a lot of Medicare-based pricing, which, you know, as you said, has always been publicly available since regulation drives the price with, you know, as you were saying, with some regional or state-level variation. But what about the private side of things? Because it's, you know, I don't know how many people outside of healthcare know it, but it's, you know, kind of I always hear it as axiomatic that you want a third split, meaning a third private patients, a third Medicare, and a third Medicaid, and that'll actually theoretically get you some profit since private gets you a profit. Medicare has historically been break even, although I've been seeing reports that that is starting to fall into the red zone now, and then that Medicaid is traditionally doesn't turn a profit for an entity.
Well, so here's where things, and I know it was a long setup to the meat of this discussion today, which is how do we get to rational commercial price transparency? On the path to rational price transparency, there is some degree of variation in pricing when Medicare and Medicaid and the qualified health plans all are contracted, if you will, by the government or regulated by the government, but negotiate private rates. That is an area where CMS has put a thumb on the scale to begin the process of getting that information to be disclosed. In fact, in the rules that just came out about a week or so ago on broadcast, CMS published a bunch of rules about interoperability and patient access. And they included in those rules a bunch of questions about price transparency. And in this example, an important question is whether or not the net price will be publicly required of plans that do business with the government. I'm hopeful that the process that we're underway will result ultimately in a rule or a technical amendment that suggests that if I am enrolling in a Medicare or Medicaid managed care product or a qualified health plan that gets subsidies, that I have the right to see the net price that's been negotiated. And that is a fascinating shift. It is certainly a leaning in the direction of price transparency, and hopefully might inspire organizations in the commercial market to demand similar disclosure for their employees. So if you're a large self-insured employer and you're trying to sort of replicate some of the findings that we're seeing in the patient access rule that came out a few weeks ago, that you might want to attach an Appendix A to your contract and say, consumers should have the right, employees should have the right to access the net price information. And more importantly, to access it not only with their human eyes, but through a machine that they entrust that can help them compute relevant recommendations on their behalf. And so when you see this conversation of price transparency, please know that the way we're going to have this conversation for the remainder of the podcast, it's as much about a human reading the price transparency as it is a machine reading it and incorporating it amongst an array of other information to give you a recommendation that might help you make a better decision. And that latter piece is what has me really excited about the price transparency movement, including the Chargemaster rule that you likely will cover in a few moments.
So, and actually that's a good point in terms of that you want it to be not just human readable, but machine readable. And, you know, I think I would tend to agree with you and think that the machine readable side of the equation is going to be the most powerful and most impactful part, because that theoretically allows the information to spread further and faster.
Yes. And more importantly, all of the complexity that you and I are going to cover, are patients really capable of figuring all this stuff out? It's complicated, et cetera, et cetera. We had these exact same debates when the country went from pension plans to 401ks. Hey, the stock market's complicated. People are going to get duped. You don't want grandma to get cheated out of her pension because she went to some shady stock purchasing program. And so this sort of paternalistic view that says, no, we have to limit choice and limit freedom and limit transparency on the fear that people are going to make bad decisions, that we've already been down this road in a similar complicated environment. And I think what we're starting to see now in healthcare, now that we're getting more machine readable, is that the complexity could be simplified in today's smartphone world, where more Americans than not have a supercomputer in their pocket, and it's capable of helping render that simplicity. Today, there aren't a lot of source data standardized in a manner that allows those machines to perform that calculation. So it's very manual and labor intensive to attempt to give people advice. But as we standardize net pricing data, then hopefully we'll have a new era of marketplace competition on organizations helping people make sense of that information, not just the price, but obviously the cost and quality implications when it comes to the overall healthcare delivery system.
Yeah, and actually, maybe we should take a quick step back, and I think you kind of slipped in the definition of what you mean by net price, but I think it would probably be helpful to be very explicit about it, because you know, you've referenced the fact that CMS is now saying to hospitals, post your charge master, which, you know, I think some people might be familiar with, but that is definitely not going to be the net price. So I think it'll be helpful to kind of just break that down quickly, so to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah. Healthcare in the United States is a fairly odd duck as it relates to price. You and I can shop for a good, go on Amazon or visit Walmart or whatever, and feel confident that we can shop for a particular good or service. In healthcare, we rely on third parties or insurance companies to kind of negotiate on our behalf. We may not have the raw material to understand what the beginning price of the negotiation was, where they ended up, and which insurance company has the best deal across all the different doctors and hospitals and lab companies that I might want to interact with. So we've largely outsourced to the insurance companies this sort of complicated negotiation, if you will, across the healthcare system. So every organization, doctors, hospitals, and in this case, the rules around hospital prices, starts with your opening offer. And for hospitals, the opening offer is the charge master. It makes literally no sense to the average human on why an aspirin listed on the hospital's charge master would be listed at $25 a pill. What silliness does that? That's not something we should read into. That doesn't mean the hospital's inefficient. It doesn't mean the hospital's efficient. It's literally an opening gambit to a third-party negotiation that brings that number down. So generally speaking, the retail price or the charge master reflects the opening gambit and under very rare circumstances has almost nothing to do with the actual price that you pay. Often through insurance, for the most of us that have insurance, and then for the uninsured, a complicated formula about whether the uninsured qualifies for a charity discount, or for the some group of people that may be underinsured, they may be the ones that are sacked with some percentage of that outrageous opening gambit in terms of their out-of-pocket outlay. And so we've got this really complicated pricing model that starts with the open gambit and ends with what we would think of as a net actual price.
Yeah, and being able to get that net actual price is, I know as we've been talking about, that's the exceedingly difficult part. Even in places, like for example, I'm in Massachusetts where I'm theoretically supposed to be able to call either my insurer or my provider to be able to get that actual price so that I can have an understanding of the cost, although you have to be extremely specific in terms of what you're looking for before something occurs. And I think we were talking about a little bit in terms of, do we think market demand will push and enable that transparency, or is there going to be more regulation required, or is it some combination of the two?
Well, this is where we may lift up for a moment and talk about the enabling ingredients for that net price calculation to come through. So there are a few pieces of information that the hospital would need in order to calculate your net price. So Joe Blow on the street calling the hospital and just saying, hey, I'm a Blue Cross of Massachusetts customer, what's my price, doesn't quite work because each individual plan under the Blue Cross umbrella might have a separate negotiation. You might have an insurance product that has a deductible or require you to pay coinsurance. You may be in network for a particular service but out of network for something else given the circumstances. You might require a referral, and with referral, it's X price, and without the referral, it's Y price. So there's a lot of very specific to you information that the insurance company knows that's not that obvious to the hospital at the time they're giving you a quote from your phone call. So part of the conversation that we're having, and I think this is where the CMS rules are really powerful, part of the conversation is what can the plans do to facilitate this net price calculation? Well, one argument is the plan could be obligated to provide a machine-readable access to the very same information that they have. You need yin to make the yang. You need the ketchup and the mustard, or whatever you want to, the analogy is. You need the hospital to know what their source prices are. You need them to understand where you are in your insurance benefit. And then only in the mixture of the two can they provide for you a practical actual price that forecasts what would look like on the back end when they submit your claim for billing. That piece today is deemed by many as too difficult. And part of the reason why is we're relying on these hospitals and health plans to beef up their IT to do that type of work. And it's just not high on the priority list. So it's not something that gets done. Part of the disruptive idea here is to make sure that if a consumer with a mobile app that can equally subscribe to their data feeds from the health plan and the hospital's charge master and related feeds, that I don't have to call the hospital to get the net price. I can compute it directly because I have access to the information. And that's where you have to see these as building blocks or enabling ingredients to that future vision, We're not going to say that a single action by Medicare regulating the disclosure of charge prices by hospitals will solve the problem, but nor do we say that that is a useless thing to do. By making that information machine readable, what CMS is essentially saying is we're hopeful third-party applications can start to subscribe to that feed plus your health plan feed and give you a more accurate assessment when you need it most.
Yeah, and I like your description of it as building blocks, because I also, you know, not only are you creating the blocks that you can piece together to get to the end result that you're looking for, but I think it also starts building incremental cultural change of getting used to the experience of unlocking and shining light on information that previously is usually, I guess not even previously, but is currently for the most part deemed extremely proprietary and confidential and gets locked down that way as well.
That is correct. So the big debate right now, and this is a fascinating one, in HIPAA, which is often referenced as a blocker to data sharing, there's actually a provision that the HIPAA right of access, the provision of HIPAA that says if I invoke the right to access my information, that it must be met in a format that is readily producible, that it might actually be an obligation of the system to release that information to me, depending on whether or not it's constituted as part of my health information. Now, that may be a bridge too far in interpreting the net price as being a mandate, but CMS could certainly pave the way by suggesting that if you are doing business with the government, you must share, and that may set the precedent that all the other insurance company contracts with large employers or state employees or whomever include in their contract negotiations a hashtag follow Medicare attachment to their procurement that suggests that we want to do the exact same thing. And if you have the technical means to make it available to Medicare Advantage patients, you should also have the technical means of providing that to my self-insured employer and the employees that work for me. And so there is this interesting yin and yang, which is today there's no standardized mechanism to request the net price. None of the enabling ingredients are really standardized. And so you've got a lot of custom one-off, company A tries to cut a deal with company B and all the rest. And so to the extent that it's possible, I believe what CMS is really doing is knocking down those barriers to drive standardization. And once the data feed is standardized for one use case, you can imagine it being replicated everywhere. And that's the holy grail of where this is all going to end up.
Yeah, and that chain will be very interesting to follow. And I'm very reluctant to have to cut our conversation off, but believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Anish Chopra, for a great conversation today.
My pleasure. I wish you the best, and thank you so much for having me on your terrific show.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.